Recording. This is an interview with Robert Parletta, undertaken by Katrina Spencer on the 8th of January 2018 at the Campbelltown Council Chambers. It's part of the Campbelltown City Council Oral History Project, Our Fruitful Record, A History of Market Gardens in Campbelltown. And Robert, your family have had market gardens in Campbelltown, so would you like to start by telling us your full name?
My name is Robert Parletta.
Right, and
I was born in April 1968.
Right, okay, and you were born here in Australia?
I was born in South Australia, born in Adelaide.
Right.
In Medindi, actually.
Okay, and your father, what was his name?
Antonio.
And was he born here?
No, he was not born here.
So
he was a post-World War II migrant from the southern part of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Place like a little village outside of the city of Benevento. So the villages, a lot of them have come from there. San Marco dei Cavati.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out in 1952.
Right. And so how old was he when he came out?
24.
Was he married at that time?
No, he wasn't.
So he came out as a single man?
He was single, yes.
And did he come out with other family members at all?
Well, he was the first of his family to come out, and then, as was the custom, they called other family members over.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some other great uncles and other village people from the village that had come across in the 20s. My great uncle came over in the 1920s, and he was only 20 years of age then.
Mm-hmm.
So that was before after the First World War.
Mm.
He decided to come to Australia. Some of his other siblings went to Boston in the United States.
Mm.
And so my uncle Mark, my great uncle Mark, Mark Ceritello, lived had a market garden on St. Bernard's Road.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 60s, they bought an orchard in the Adelaide Hills, Montacute, where they had cherries, lemons,
okay,
persimmons, plums. So through family and extended friends, there's been a close association with the market gardens of Campbelltown and Ross Trevor.
So when your dad came out here, did he stay with his uncles, or where was he living?
When my dad first came out, he was actually worked for the Foxes at Foxfield.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived on their premises, so he was like a jack of all trades for them. So he would have tended to their cattle, to their sheep, and to their property.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother came out in 1955.
Right, so he knew your mother prior?
My mother and father have come from both the same village.
Mm-hmm.
My mother's name is Lucia. They came from the same village, but they weren't related or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because the village was quite a big regional village, not large, but there was still a population of probably 8,000 to 10,000 in those early years after the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had this mass migration. A lot of people came to South Australia and Campbelltown in particular. A lot of them went to Argentina. There's a large San Marques community in Argentina. She came out in 1955, joined my father at Foxfield. And in 1961, they bought 1960-61. They bought a property at Paradise. So in those days, they were properties in the area of 1 hectare to 2 hectares of land that gave migrants the ability to work the land.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was growing up, the nearest neighbour was, you know, 250 metres or somewhere between 100 and 250 metres away. So there was the Mercurellas across the road, there was the De Corsos next door, the Michelles down the road, the Bill Perios down Silks Road. So there weren't that many houses. It wasn't highly, not very dense in terms of housing at that point in time.
And a number of those families came from the same region?
Yes, yes, yes. So the Mercurellas from a similar a village close to my parents' village called San Giorgio. And the Corsos next door were from San Marco as well. And the Micheles down the road were also from San Marco. So that whole strip between Gorge Road and the river was all market gardeners from that general vicinity.
Mm-hmm.
And they all knew each other.
And you said when your mum came out, she went to live at Foxwood. So were they married?
My parents got married by proclamation.
Okay. So she knew she was coming out to be with your father and...
Yeah, she was like an arranged marriage. Yeah, she was betrothed to be more than my father from across the shore.
And children, how many children did they have?
I have four siblings,
right.
So I'm one of five.
Right, and where do you fit in that?
I'm the second to last.
Second to last.
So my parents had three girls to begin with. And then when I was born, most of the community didn't believe that my father and my mother had a boy because they'd had girls beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of long hours working in the garden growing up. It was a case of my parents' market garden was not only our home, but it was also their place of business.
Mm.
And it was a place where they socialised a lot with other market gardeners and other people from the area. So there are a lot of fond memories, but there are also some
hard
memories that that come to mind as a result.
Yeah. So you said they were long hours. So both your parents worked on the market garden?
They both worked together, yes.
Yep. And your
father... They were partners in crime, so to speak.
Your father didn't have another job?
Well, initially when they first came out here, they did. My dad used to also work for the wool processing. There are a number of wool processing facilities on the other side of town at Woodville.
Mm-hmm.
And so my father used to ride his bike from Foxfield and ride his bike to Glynde and catch the tram. Because there was a tram that used to go down Gorge Road, down Paynham Road. And then change trams in the city and go to Woodville.
Okay.
So a lot of them went to work for either General Motors or Chrysler.
Mm.
My father went to work for a wool processing facility. I think, I'm not 100% sure, but it may have been owned by the Michelle family. But I'm not 100% sure about that. I'm only going by memory.
Mm. And so when you came along, were you expected to work on the market garden as a child?
Expecting is maybe, I suppose you could say expected to, yes. I mean, I think even as a child you see your parents working hard day in, day out. There's a sense of obligation to at least help. I think it's part of our DNA to help our parents and our family and in whatever way we can. So as I got older, I came to the conclusion that I was fit and able, so I could do that.
Mm. And your sisters, were they involved? Yeah,
they did so too, in between going to school and growing up. It was... It was an interesting life, yeah. Very interesting.
Mm.
I suppose we're probably, in terms of from a generational perspective, I'd say that I'm at the end of the spectrum of children of migrant market gardeners who worked on the land, because then I went to university and didn't pursue a career on the land per se. although it's always remained fond with me in terms of, you know, my gardening is my form of meditation.
Mm. Mm. So
and my connection with my parents as well.
Oh. So growing up, did you speak Italian at home?
My first language was Italian.
Mm.
Well, it was like an Italian dialect. It wasn't Italian because my parents, despite they grew up in an era where schooling wasn't the norm.
Mm.
back in Italy, so when they came out, you know, very resourceful, intelligent people, but not educated per se.
They'd been here a number of years by the time you were born, so were they reasonably fluent in English by that stage?
I think they got by.
Right.
But I think the downside of having lived in a community that had a high proportion of Italians in the community meant that they didn't have to travel very far to find someone who spoke their language, and generally speaking, they gravitated to others to help them with translations and with getting things done that involved, you know, English as the form of communication. So it much the same as what occurs today with, you know, migrants that have come into, and refugees have come into Australia. They rely on, you know, other family members and friends that speak English a lot better than they do until they...
And we'd do the same if we were going somewhere else. Yeah. So your family property was on the corner of sort of Silks Road and Gorge Road.
Correct.
How much land did they have?
It was about 1.4 hectares.
Right.
Which doesn't seem like a lot, but there's a lot of market gardening you can do in 1.4 hectares.
And is that because of the soil conditions, do you think?
Well, I suppose I'm no expert on the history of that river delta that goes from basically that gorge road all the way through to the ford at the bottom of Silks Road and butts up against what is now known as Durnan Court Highbury, that area. But the soil that we used to work was very, very dark, you know, that babiscus clay, which was great during summer because it used to retain the water, provided that you watered it, because otherwise if you didn't water it, then you'd have these huge cracks appearing. And the flip side of that is that during winter, it retained the water such that it became a quagmire, and working it during summer was more fruitful than working it during winter, but it was hard going in winter, especially when during very wet winters, you know, July, August, many, many times boots have been stuck.
up
to the top, come and help me, I'm stuck in the mud.
Mm. And given that, did your family do much, do you think, to improve the soil? What sorts of things did they, fertilisers or...?
Well, in terms of improving the soil, I think the soil is natively very, you know, rich in nutrients and in organisms. So we you know, six inches under, there's no problem with worms. You don't need a lot of organic matter from my experiences to get very high yielding. I mean, one of the things that categorises, and this sticks in my memory, is that nowadays we go and buy carrots that are grown in Virginia, and some of them come from Tasmania, and they come from WA. But if you did a blind test, the carrots that are grown in Campbelltown and this area around Paradise are just the sweetness and they're just to die for. So if you did a blind test, you'd soon get a lot of people voting as to what the Campbelltown carrots were, because they're just very great to eat, hard work to harvest.
So what did your parents grow mainly on the...
Well, my parents grew what the wholesale market community would classify as bunch lines. So things like carrots back in the day. It's amazing that I note that the crops that they grew changed over the 30 or 40 years, and I can give you a bit of an insight into that.
Good. But
when they first started, they were heavily into what carrots, parsnips, turnips, swedes, those sort of root vegetables, because appetites and food preferences, we were very much a steak and three veg society back then. Through, you know, that would have been in the 60s, the late 50s and 60s, and then as we progressed in more into the, you know, when I was around picking, you know, radishes and parsley and spring onions and spinach and silver beet, you know, we were getting more into the leafy vegetables and the shorter cycle time to grow the vegetables, so that you were sowing and you were cropping a lot more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And the footprint that you needed to harvest a good crop was a lot smaller. And the prices were, you know, quite good. So they started off doing, you know, like I said, carrots, swedes, parsnips, turnips, and then onions. You know, we used to do, you know, fresh bunch onions. And then we moved more into the spring onions, the parsley, radishes.
The salad-y.
More the salad-y type vegetables.
Mm.
And even tomatoes. So my father used to grow outdoor tomatoes, which were traditionally, you know, they tried to grow the tomatoes because a lot of the tomatoes that were grown in glass houses in the western suburbs or up in Virginia, whenever you got a really hot spell, they'd get burnt.
Mm.
So we were lucky enough to have that really rich soil. And so as long as you kept the water up to the tomatoes, there were harvests, or there were summers that we were very lucky where we got very good yields.
And do you know what
and
varieties?
And good prices.
What sort of varieties they grew?
Well, it's funny you mentioned varieties. I mean, Romas were the ones that they did grow, right? But my father actually was one of the first people in the area to grow cherry tomatoes.
Mm.
And back in the day, nobody wanted cherry tomatoes.
They were new.
Mm. And so my dad used to sell to some of the retailers cherry tomatoes in 10 kilogram boxes, which by the end of when he grew cherry tomatoes and they became more popular, then they were being put into, you know, the 250 300 gram punnets. But at the beginning, nobody wanted them, and so some of his more loyal retailers would say, okay, well, I'll take them. And then, you know, as they became more popular, then he started growing them again. We also used to grow baby beetroot and baby turnips and heirloom carrots and nobody they weren't popular.
I was going to say, was there a market for those?
Well, I think that he was trying to establish a market, but again, on the back of us, you know, that traditional diet. Now they're all the rage. So in terms of getting back to your question about how we would enrich the soil, is generally speaking, we'd rotate the crops. One of the things that my parents weren't a great fan of is the use of, you know, pesticides and herbicides. So I wouldn't say they were you know, organic gardeners, but they were certainly applied a lot more of the biodynamic principles than what you know, larger scale commercial operations would espouse because of, you know, the yield aspects. But we used to do a lot of crop rotation. So for example, during winter we would enrich we'd enrich the soil by planting like broad beans and peas, with the view that when spring came you would rotary hoe that into the ground to inject some nitrogen in there. The other things that they would do would rotate crops, so that for example they'd grow garlic, and then on top of that you'd plant things like carrots.
Okay.
Or any vegetable that is susceptible to pests, and a lot of pests, you'd plant them on top of onions and garlic, you see.
So natural.
Because the soil is naturally, the remnants of the garlic in the soil and the onions. Companion planting. So there's sort of some of the things they did, and I don't know whether they did so scientifically or whether they did it because that's what they grew up doing, trial and error, and that's what worked.
And so, your mum and your dad were both working on the land. Did they have other people come and work?
There were periods of time where, apart from their children, there were periods of time where they would have other Italian ladies that had, you know, whose husbands were working at General Motors Holden or at Chrysler or some other factory, that would come and help with, you know, picking, weeding, tending to the land. It was a lot of them were dressed in the traditional black attire, especially the widows. But it wasn't easy.
No,
it's
hard.
It's
hard outdoor work.
18 degree sunny day is the ideal, but if you consider how many 18 degree sunny days do we get in a year, you think that we have extremes on the hot side and you have extremes on the wet side, and you don't, you wouldn't take one versus the other, because, you know, having your hands in wet soil, cold water for 8 to 10 hours a day versus the heat, you don't know which you'd take, because one saps you for energy and one
freezes
you.
You mentioned a moment ago that you like rotary hoe the beans in. So did you have other, like, tractors or other farm implements that you...
Well, when my parents first came out, they didn't have any of those instruments.
Right, so it was all by hand?
Yeah. It was by hand, yeah, to begin with, but that probably precedes my time. It precedes my time in the sense that due to the weather, there were times when, for example, if you have a wet winter, you couldn't get in there with a tractor because by virtue of the soil, and if you're going to get bogged with the rubber boots, then the tractor's going to... Many a time, either my dad or my neighbours got bogged and somebody else had to come and help, unbog us from the heavy soil because the soil underneath stays quite wet. So it dries above in that first, 12 inches, but below it gets quite wet. So you consider a tractor's quite heavy. So during early spring when we were required to... till the soil and prepare for another crop to go in, there were periods of time where we would still hoe them with a hoe fork.
Mm.
So it's like a fork, but in made as a hoe.
Mm.
To basically fork the soil to till it over, so to ready for planting for the next crop that you wanted to put in.
So were you doing that after school or?
Yeah, after school. Yeah.
Mm. And from what age do you think you were doing that sort of work?
I think that as I got older, the duties became a bit more onerous, but. In terms of when I was, you know, 4, 5, 6 years of age, it was, you know, carrying things, from the harvest point onto the tractor, helping wash the vegetables, helping pick the vegetables, but nothing in terms of, ploughing the land.
Mm.
But as I got a bit older and, you know, you see your parents out there doing it, you come to the conclusion, I can do that, so you help out.
Yeah. So what, from your memories, when do you think were the busiest times of the year?
Easter and Christmas by far.
Yeah? And so what are your memories of that being Easter and Christmas?
Oh, look,
busy?
very busy in the sense that my father was very fortunate to supply some fairly large retailers in some big shopping centres.
Wow.
And they, in that week before Christmas, there were days where, I'd get sick of picking parsley.
Mm.
I'd get sick of picking spring onions.
And
there were times where, not at Christmas time, but during the year, that I would basically go and help, especially when it's hot, help my parents before school, and having to wash my hands with White King, because otherwise I'd get to school and my hands would smell of spring onions.
And what school were you going to?
Primary school, I went to Campbelltown Primary.
Right, so locally.
On the corner of Gorge Road and Daly Road there. So,
mm-hmm.
And then my parents sent my brother and I up to St Ignatius College, which was just up the road. So they chose to, send us the schools that were close. That served the purpose of getting us home quickly or getting me home quickly to help. No, I'm only joking. I don't think that was their intention.
I imagine there were other market garden family kids at school with you?
Yeah, correct.
Mm.
Not that many at St Ignatius, though, but there were some.
Yeah. And so you said it was a fairly strong community of the market gardeners. What about the Anglo or the non-Italian market gardeners? Did you mix much as families with them?
No, not really. I think that was a function of the majority of the non-Italian market gardeners were in the celery and cauliflower business that was closer to the river because they took water from the river.
Mm-hmm.
We were more the small bunch line items. So I'm pretty sure my dad would have had a close association with them, because my dad used to take his produce to the East End market in the city, and the retailers and wholesalers would, so we'd pack the truck at night, and he would take the produce to the market, and he had standing retailers and standing wholesalers that would buy the produce from him, and he probably knew them, but I was always attending to the truck to make sure that, when a customer came, that I was there to either give them the produce or I was there ready to take them the produce in those, you know, on those carts that they used to have, those which used to be drawn by horse and cart in the day, but in the market, that after the the horses weren't around, we used to cart them by hand.
So how old were you when you started going to the market with your dad?
Oh, look, I think initially when I was 5 or 6, it was like it was like an excursion. I actually, when I was at high school, started working for one of the fruit and wholesale, one of the wholesale merchants in there. I used to work for Pat Scousey from when I was 14 years of age. He used to come and pick me up at home, 12:30 a.m. on a Monday morning when I was 14 during the school holidays.
And so you'd go in early in the morning.
Get to the wholesale markets at 1 o'clock. And then he'd drop me off home at like 12:30, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, have a sleep, and then go and help mum and dad in the garden. So obviously that was during school holidays rather than
term time. So what did you do?
So suffice to say, I didn't go to schoolies when I graduated from high school. There was no Victor Harbour for me.
You were busy working. So, and what sorts of jobs did you do in the market?
Oh, look, I used to, I did a range of things. I worked for Pat for right through to my uni days. Right, so even after I finished university, I still worked for Pat on a part-time basis. And he was very good to me. He was very good to our family as well. And so presumably, I mean, my father must have gotten me the job. He would have said, you know, my son's ready to come and work for someone else because... The sun beating down on his head is getting to him a bit.
He'd be better in the market than here.
He might be. I was just trying to recollect what I was going to say. Yeah, so packing orders. I did some cashier work at one point in time. I think Pat realised that I could add up fairly well. I could add numbers. Loading, unloading, inspecting produce, helping retailers select what they want, packing orders, getting ready for dispatch of orders and stuff like that.
And was that unusual to have someone, you know, of your age in there, or were there other young...
There were other guys my age, yeah.
So it was quite common.
It was a different era.
So your parents kept that property, and did they expand on that at all, or did they start to sell it off? Or?
Oh, look, I think that my dad did have another piece of land at Ross Trevor, but... with 5 kids, I think that they had their hands full enough with what they had on the go. No. Expansion wasn't probably one of those things that was on the cards. They were happy with their lifestyle that they had.
And so how long did they work that land for? You said about 30-odd years, was it?
I'm just trying to think exactly when Dad gave it up. I think he, even into his late 70s, on a part-time basis, he always worked the land because he used to take some of his produce to Tony and Mark's at Jan Street, who he had supplied for a number of years. And so... I think there was a fair bit of mutual respect there between Tony, Mark and my dad, because my dad would have... Because they're there from San Marco as well. So they're from there. And my parents knew their parents.
Right.
And so he was... I think my mother retired because my mother's health, you know, I think the years of... childbearing and hardcore labour in the garden took its toll. But I think that, and I think this is a generational thing, that they don't know when to give up.
No.
you know, because I remember my father's...
Work is life.
Work is life and life is work. My father said, you know, there's no use living, you know, I'm living like a lion. When I become a lamb, then it's all over.
Yes.
And that was their, you know, there was no going to the gym for them. It was working out in the garden, right?
Mm. So social life for them, or socialising, or relaxation? Do you have any memories of that?
It was mainly around immediate family and immediate friends.
Mm. In the church, I imagine.
I mean, from an acquaintance perspective, but not. It wasn't for my parents. It wasn't certainly a hub,
right?
As it might have been for others.
Mm. Yeah. So
five kids.
Yeah. So do you remember any of those sorts of social gatherings or social times from your childhood? What are some of your early memories of that downtime?
We used to have big parties.
Mm.
Yeah, we used to have big. My parents used to grow their own chickens.
I was going to ask about animals. So you had chickens.
We used to grow our own chickens, and a chicken cull was a full day exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So it was wasn't a case of we're going to kill half a dozen. It was like we're going to kill 12 dozen, or 8 dozen, or 10 dozen. And then they, for my parents and particularly my mother, getting a freezer was an amazing gift, because they were very resourceful. They would grow the chickens. They would cull them and they'd, you know, keep some fresh and then put some in the freezer.
And did they sell chickens as well?
No.
And would
apart from, you know, giving them to family and friends.
Right, so family and friends would come on chicken culling day, would they?
Maybe. Sometimes.
Sometimes. Okay. So when did your property, because it's now housing, isn't it?
Effectively, yeah.
Yeah. Has any of the land left still being worked at all?
No, the only bit that... No. What's left is probably just under 1,000 square metres that I tend to grow things during summer more than anything else.
Mm.
Just as a hobby garden.
So you work that as a hobby?
Mm.
Mm. But the rest of the land was sold off at some stage?
Yeah, at some stage, yeah.
Okay, so was that...
That started basically when my parents got to that retirement age in the late 80s, that late 80 time frame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was no concept of superannuation.
No.
Mm-hmm. Their land was their superannuation, so...
Mm-hmm.
So they, when they got to that age, they basically said, well, you know, we're not going to take it with us, so we'll subdivide it.
And I imagine a lot of the land in the area was being
it's very sad, not from that aspect, but from the aspect that because of the richness of the soil, that this whole area, ideally... if it was still market garden territory, it would be very, very fruitful and very lucrative. To the unfortunate thing is that the price of land went up over time. You see, now that they grow things in Virginia, I don't know what the. I'd hate to think. Well, soil might be okay there, but
not the same.
Based on what I've seen, I don't think it compares.
No. Yes, and I'm not sure we'd work the sorts of intensity and hours that our parents' generation were prepared to put in.
Although probably nowadays you wouldn't have to do that. you wouldn't have to work those hours because you'd be able to do so with a bit more automation in terms of, you know, obviously, apart from the weather, if you had bigger plots of land, you'd be able to work it more efficiently than what my parents did.
Mm. And have any of your brothers or sisters stayed within the market gardening
area? My father had a cousin that who has since passed away. But both my father's cousin and my father have passed away. But they have a market garden on Maryvale Road near Foxfield, and they still his son. Joe's son Eric still does market gardening, but
they've sold that now, haven't they?
I don't know about that. Mm. Have they? Or still being worked?
I think
I only saw Eric out there the other day.
Yeah. I believe in July this year.
Oh, so. Okay. Well, then I don't know. I didn't know that.
Mm. Okay. And so, the best things about having a market garden, from your family's perspective, what do you think the benefits and positives that came out of it for your family?
That's an interesting question. Strong sense of family and community, that's for sure.
Mm.
I remember growing up and we used to grow iceberg lettuce.
Mm.
And we used to pick it and eat it straight out of the garden, or even carrots, you know, still with the smell of the soil on it, and just get a knife and peel them back and eat them. And it was just to die for in terms of the quality of the food. There was a great sense of I think being outdoors was definitely one of the positives. For me, the garden was a place in a funny way, even though it was harsh, but it was a place where I could collect my thoughts and, you know, meditate, so to speak.
Mm.
Think about things. You know, when you're when you're picking parsley from, you know, 6 a.m. or 6:30 a.m. till 3 p.m, bunch after bunch after bunch, you know, in that pre-Christmas period, a lot of things that you can think about.
And you still live on the land, so is that connection to the land being important as well, that sort of sense of history and family?
I think the connection to the land, yes, not necessarily the connection to that land.
Okay.
So the connection, look, put it this way, I still harvest my own seeds today.
Oh.
So I still make my own eggplant seeds. I still make my own capsicum seeds. Mm. I still make my own spinach seeds, cos lettuce seeds. I still make my own.
Mm.
My parents used to make onion seeds as well, but I struggle with those. I never get them to fill out right.
Mm.
But, yeah, so...
And what about your brothers and sisters? Your brother and sisters, do they do any of that sort of gardening?
Oh, I think they garden at their own homes, yeah.
Mm,
so and, good. You know, like if I like the other day I picked some, I've got this variety of climbing beans that I picked and shared with, you know, some of my siblings.
Mm. And you collect the seed, I presume, for those?
Yeah, and dry them out, yeah. Mm.
So you've got those ready to go.
Yeah.
So there's some of the benefits. From your memories as a child, what do you think were the challenges, the biggest challenges growing up on a market garden?
It's a thankless job, that's for sure.
Hard work.
It is hard work. You look, getting back to what I was saying about tomatoes, there were times where my parents would throw in extra tomato plants during summer with the view of seeing whether they were lucky enough to get a good harvest and get good prices.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a risk element to that. One of the negatives is that when you don't get a good price, but you get a bumper harvest, you still have to you still have to water them, you still have to pick them, you still have to look after them, tender them,
mm-hmm.
and the same thing with anything that you know that you put down, you sow. You know, they say you reap what you sow, but you reap what you sow at the right price,
right.
Because if there were times when we would plant, like I said, iceberg lettuce, and prices were good. You know, you'd pick a box of iceberg lettuce, you'd make decent money by virtue of the fact that during summer, the soil is good, good fruit, good yield, hopefully the price is right. Then there are times when the yield was good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we get a hailstorm.
Oh.
And then what happens is the yield goes down, but the price goes up. So it's a case of, and as you know, with rain, there are bans. Some people, you know, market gardeners down the road, for example, with the Michelles on Avenue Road, got, you know, their crop was wiped out and ours was okay. So they get nothing for their crop. We may, you know, make hay while the sun shines.
Yeah. I presumed you had mains water.
That's right. Some of the market gardens in the area did have bores. We had mains water by virtue of where we were. And mains water was very cheap up until probably the late 80s. It's funny that my parents and a number of the market gardens in the area did quite well from a financial perspective in that 70s to mid 80s period. Then it became a lot harder from a just using the techniques that they'd applied before became a lot harder because the cost of water went up, the prices stabilized. There was a big push of people moving to Virginia and growing the same things in Virginia, so the price came down. They had bore water, people buy produce on what it looks like in the price. They don't buy it on how good it's for you and what it tastes like. This is one of the things that has astounded me throughout my life, in that we've really got our fruit and veg labelling laws all wrong way around. We can go to a fruit shop or we can go to Coles and Woolworths and they're under no obligation to tell us what that particular piece of fruit or vegetable's been sprayed with. And yet we put all these hoops for people that
are growing.
They're growing organically. Should be the other way around, shouldn't it? The onus of trust is on the person growing organically, not on the person who's... Because I reckon... If I was a betting person, a lot of... If there was a requirement to disclose exactly the genealogy and traceability of what went onto a piece of fruit or vegetable to take it from sowing stage to table stage, I bet you you'd walk out and say, gee, I'm not buying that thing. You know, a lot of things have touched that.
Yeah, totally agree.
So, but anyway, I mean.
So, is there anything else you'd like to add to this interview? about your growing up or your parents' experience of market gardening here in Campbelltown?
Not really. I mean, we could sit and talk about this, you know, for ad nauseum. We could, because there are stories that, you know, Sam Mercurillo, who was our next door neighbour, who I believe you're interviewing
this morning.
Oh, you interviewed him this morning. Okay, when I was growing up, and when I was my bedroom window was facing Gorge Road, because we lived on the corner of Gorge Road and Silks Road, and he must have had semi-trailers coming to either deliver or pick up produce, and they used to park on the corner of Gorge and Silks Road, and I'd hear them stop and hear them, you know, go up the road. You know where the Bianco site is, just to change the subject. There used to be a sawmill there. Yeah, there used to be a sawmill, and they used to take deliveries of logs and whatnot, because we used to go and play there.
So it would have been more or less like a rural community when you were a child.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It was very rural.
Mm. So,
Silks Road was gravel.
Ah.
Yeah, it wasn't even a sealed road.
Now it's quite a main road.
Now it's quite a main road, yes. Mm. And also, a lot of the market gardeners that were along the river were able to take water out of the river torrents, which they obviously can't do now, nor probably they shouldn't have been able to do it back then either.
Times change. Do you still have any contact with any of the families from when you were growing up?
Oh, yeah. I'm friends with basically all the neighbours and their children.
Mm.
So they had children, and we're via families and friends. So from that aspect, we've kept that community, you know, going, that we still, you know, bump into each other, see each other, talk to each other. So that's something that will take some time to get diluted, because you know, other people will live there and it'll be just another suburb.
Yes, yeah, but it was
known as
community.
Paradise Gardens.
Okay, so it's even changed names.
Many, many moons ago.
Well, thank you. That's been really interesting to hear that history of the Campbelltown Market Garden.
Well, it was more my recollection of my childhood and interaction with it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So it'll, and will contribute to the broader project to hear those generations and different experiences.
I'm probably the last one, that last of the generation before things moved on.
And out to Virginia and so on.
Yeah. And there are others. The number of people that I've come across that whose parents or who were market gardeners in the area that I didn't even know who they were. Mm. There's quite a few of them. Mm. Quite a number of them.
Well, it was all market gardens.
Correct. They're all market gardens. It just gives you an indication of what the lifestyle that they led, that they were too busy working in the garden and didn't have a lot of time to socialise.
No. Okay, well, thank you. I'll just press stop now. And
you may, yes.
Yep.